Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Corey Peterson. Hey, Corey.
What's going on, Mike?
I'm good. How are you? I was going to say Mr. Big Kahuna, Kahuna Investments, right?
That's it. Yeah, Big Mike, dude. It's always Big Mike. That's what I love. I love about you. My best, spasiba, bajasta. But I'll tell you, it's been crazy out there, my friend. It is crazy times that we're in. And the last time we talked about a lot of stuff, but people are either your biggest asset or your biggest problem, and especially when it comes to property management. It's been crazy.
So, I think last time we talked, I remember you were pulling in property management in-house.
Yep.
So are you having in-house challenges? What's going on? I know it's hard to manage properties, especially if you're managing properties in Atlanta and you're sitting in Phoenix.
Most of my team is in the East Coast anyway. So like, even though the owner lives here, all my team and regionals and stuff are in the East Coast. But doesn't mean that we don't have our issues. And I think these are issues whether you self-manage or not, right? And it's called theft. I just watched a show on the other day talking about how Walmart is all their self-checkout lanes. They are downsizing the self-checkout lanes because they've realized too much theft is happening and that it's much better to pay for a real person, right, to check them out than to have, because people have gotten smart. They'll take a little card and act like they're doing something and go beep. So it makes the sound, but they charge 75 cents to pack a bubble gum or something, right? And theft is one of your biggest issues that you'll ever have, and it's hard to detect at first, but it always leaves a really good trail. And what I'm talking about is a lot of times your property manager, usually the one in charge, they don't make a whole lot of money as to what people make, right? So, an average property manager is making 65, 75, 85 at the top end, right? Now, Mike, they can go, and let's say I need to power wash my property, right? They may go and say, Corey, you need to power wash your property. I've got a bid, Corey. I've got two bids. I have three bids. All different names of companies, but it's all companies they either own or they've created fictitiously to go out and it's $10,000 to power wash the property. And so we just caught somebody on the take, and or it's either they're that bold and they create their own company and they submit an invoice, which we've seen, or it's the opposite of, it's the good old boy. Let me call Johnny Corporation Company, HVAC Company. I'm going to work out a backdoor deal. I'm going to give them all the business. I'm going to let them charge the top dollar, and he's going to give me a kickback on the back end. See that a lot too, right? And so how do you stop it? You've got to watch it like a hawk. And so we had to let go of a regional because she wasn't watching this property. And so once we jumped in with my other team and we started looking at it, we're like, oh, what is this? And then you start the questioning. It's like the Spanish Inquisition, Mike. And once you turn up the heat, cracks start to form, my friend.
Well, thanks for bringing it up. I certainly understand the challenge. And, I got to be careful how I put it. But my observation is, like you said, it's a business. It's a tough business. The property managers don't get paid a lot of money. And there is a natural inclination that they're looking to make some more money. Around what they do their work. And some of them wind up either, like you said, recommending their friendly vendors at the highly inflated prices, or completely outright theft. So how do you solve it? I mean, you have to know what jobs are needed. You need to know what things cost, right? And you got to have some kind of controller who can go back and
Yeah.
review and approve this
On this
stuff
particular
because
one, we
it's
had
out
two
of control.
failures. Yeah, this was a two failure process. One, and we do have an order of operations. So an invoice, a higher invoice needs, there's a certain different approvals, right? But you know, it's only as good as the people that actually look at the numbers. And so what we were having, we had a regional that was just mass approving stuff without really looking at it. She always said she was busy, and my accounting team is the first ones that brought it up. They're like, Corey, all your other regionals, you're getting feedback, you know, hey, you need to turn this back in. This is not right. And there's a lot more dialogue. And so when someone's just turning in stuff with no comments, it's a red flag. So that was the first red flag, was flew up by my accounting department. Then we go in to look. Then we find, okay, well, the regionals are really not doing a job, right? So we're like, that's not good. And we end up letting that person go. And then we keep going down the rabbit hole. And you find a whole silo of, well, that's wrong, right? And I'm, you know, I feel like we caught it early, but still, you know, there's probably, I don't know exactly how many, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of dollars went out the door in the wrong way. And I can't prove it all yet, but we're now auditing or doing a kind of a forensic audit on all of it. And we'll find it, and then we'll hold them accountable if they truly stole, right? And then we'll send it as a message to everybody else, right? And at the end of the day, you've just got to hold your team accountable, watch every dollar, and that's really the job at this point in this market economy. We talked about it last time, but you've got to watch everything. You got to watch your heart.
During the period of time when everything is inflated, it's easy because inflation p drives prices up. So if you come up with a higher price, is this really the inflation or is this an artificially created inflation?
Yeah.
So for sure,
Well, and the good news,
you
we have
gotta
different.
know what things cost in this environment, and the prices are changing because of the inflation.
We've also started working like rules of thumb, right? Or like cost of thumb, right? So because we are in different markets across a decent spectrum, we're starting to say, like, okay, here's the good pricing here. And then like we communicate all this and use this data for our buying power. If one property is getting appliances for $500 or $450 for this one thing, and that's the cheapest. How come they're all not getting it? Let's go and make a master. Here's the exact model number, and make sure we streamline that process a little bit throughout the deal. But Mike, or multifamily apartments still takes a, it's just a lot of work. No one says they want to be in the property management business. I mean, I'm an owner operator. I happen to have to get into the property management business. Because when I looked at the waters, they're all sharks, you know, and it would see much worse doing it on their dime because it's compounded. That same theft's going to happen on their dime too, but at least on my dime, I think I could catch it faster, which I feel like we did, and you know, and have more visibility into everything that we're doing, Mike, because in this new economy that we're in. It really is about watching everything. You have to watch everything every day, and you have to demand, you know, like excellence and accountability to all numbers, because anything less than that is going to lead to the cart of apples falling.
Well, it's underperformance. I mean, theft inflates expenses, and then ultimately, it you know deflates revenues and NOI and valuations and the whole thing. The whole project can be significantly impacted by a theft because things trade at a multiple of NOI. So if expenses
But I have a
inflate.
little goal. I have some upside though. I have some good stuff, right? Like there's some good things that in this current market that like for the student housing side, in my right markets, right where it's closer to D1 and bigger schools, our leasing velocity pre-leasing for this school year versus last year is about 20% up, right? We're about 20% ahead of where we were at last year. And we're getting probably a 6 to 7% increase in rents, which is pretty
That's
big.
interesting. So some submarkets where I guess supply is limited, demand is strong, the pricing continue
Yeah.
is around inflation, and speed of leasing seems to be going well. That's great. That's great to
This
hear.
is only for students. It's in student and it's in bigger D1 schools, right? Some of my smaller tertiary markets, for school student housing, we're getting only a 3% increase, right? Just a normal 3%. But in my bigger schools, where the demand, and that's kind of what you're seeing as a consolidation of student housing going away from the smaller state schools to the bigger ones. The bigger ones keep getting bigger, and there's demand there for certain. And we're getting rent increases very well. And the only thing that's the biggest factor right now is the cost of insurance.
Yeah,
Insurance across the
no
country
joke.
is
So on this
100%.
front, how bad is it? We
100
hear
to 200.
100 to 200. Is it on average for certain markets?
Certain markets. So if you're anywhere close to water from the Gulf,
It's
Georgia
probably
being one of those
300%,
markets,
right?
yes. Yeah. I got one property in Pennsylvania that we went from 130 to 300.
And that's Pennsylvania. This is not near the water. This is not hurricane
Dude,
zone.
this is crazy, right? I'm like, what gives, right? That one had a certain specific problem with it, but I've got properties in Iowa. I mean, just a normal, no loss runs, no problems. Almost 100% increase, I feel like, right? Or at least 75.
Well, the insurance industry is seeing massive inflation, and you could almost say that all insurance companies are a cartel and they all decided to raise rates at the same time. Who knows, right? But that observation has been extremely painful.
It's been anybody that's on the buy that we've bought in the last 3 years, we are that is carving and cutting into our pro forma and our profit 1000%. Now, going forward, all of that's kind of priced into the new sales, right? Because when you go buy a new property, they already know, and it's already usually on their P&L now, right? By this time.
So on the new purchase, what are you doing right now? Are you seeing any great deals? Because basically the industry is commercial real estate, specifically multifamily, is in distress. The whole sector is in tough waters, and because of the interest rates, just to say the least. Then you add inflation costs on construction, and then you add insurance costs.
So I'm only shopping REOs right now, right? I'm
So
only in the
the
REO
bank-owned
market.
stuff. Are you
Yes.
seeing already a lot of bank-owned
I
stuff? Bank-owned stuff.
just closed on one in January, right? I bought it for $7 million, 268 beds, 120 units, right?
Where?
In Columbus, Georgia, southwest of Atlanta. At Georgia State University. It's a student housing property. I already own in the market, so I understood the market very well. And the one thing about Georgia that I like is they have a their state lottery. They have what's called a HOPE program, which allows you if you make A's and B's in high school, you can get your college in a state school paid for. And it'll pay for their
Okay.
tuition. So that
So
gives mom and
it's
dad money for
student
their housing.
housing.
Yes.
So it's student housing as a specialty, and if you're getting near some of these schools, and the students get, I guess they get, is it a scholarship or is it a
It's
special program that pays for the housing?
paid. Their lottery is set up to fund this program.
Oh,
And
so
it's
the
a,
Georgia lottery raises money
yep.
and it pays for, I guess, folks who have done well and they
If you
have.
make A's and B's in high school, you can get your state, if you go to state college, it'll pay for your tuition.
It's like a merit scholarship. If you do well,
Yep.
the state provides a scholarship like fund. This
Yep.
is great.
The lottery, it's a beautiful program, right? So that's why we're in this market, right? Because we're like, it keeps the quality of people coming in. That's they're getting free housing or free college, and then mom and dad just pay for the housing.
So it's not too bad overall. They can
It still
afford.
works, right? Yeah, it still works. It's a workable program. But we bought this one, and our interest rate, Mike, was 8.7%.
Is this a floater? Is this variable rate depth?
No, we definitely didn't want to do that. We did. It's a Stan Corp. It's a CMBS loan. Eight.
8.7%, right?
Yep.
It
Yep.
feels high, but
It
I
is
guess
high.
market.
It is high, but it was market, and but the property still cash flows, and it cash flows pretty good because it was a bank-owned asset. So this is me. You got to buy the pain right now and find the deals because there's a lot of people out, there's a lot of deals that are coming, and I think even more coming in that REO sector. Now, the only barrier to entry is I bought this off auction.com, right? So I was in a bidding process that I won, and in 48 hours I had to put down $1 million, right? So you got to have liquid capital ready to go. Right. And then you have to close in 30 days.
Yep.
And you can have an extension that you can pay for another half a million and get another 30 days. So I actually paid the half a million. I got 60 days to close. You don't get an inspection, right? You get a property condition report, which is pretty thorough, but still your PCA is only as good as you look, truly look at the details. And we did still get to go to the property and ask a lot of questions to the staff and stuff, but they didn't let us do a true due diligence on all the units. But so that's why you're buying it at a steep discount, right? It's
How
kind of
much of a
like
discount did you get? What do you think?
we at a price for 8.4 million, right? The
He
day
bought
that
for
we bought it,
seven.
bought it for seven.
So like
So
20% discount, something like that.
yeah.
That's pretty powerful because the valuations are obviously correcting significantly, and you bought it at a discount on as is basis by buying through an auction process and sort of not sight unseen, you still had a chance to do
Yeah,
good
and I was already in the
property.
market. I already owned a property right next door, so I knew this property really well, and I knew the market really well. So I felt like I was able. There wasn't a whole lot of bidders. There's only four bidders in the auction, and so yeah, I actually bought it a lot. I was willing to go up another half a million to $600,000, and but the bidding stopped. So I was like, well, I wasn't going to hit the button and bid on myself. So I was like, nope, we're good. But through that process, though, I learned a lot, and that was where my eyes become a little more open to there's more deals like this. You've just got to go find the right banks. And I'm trying to get now into instead before it goes into the auction, let me like have a crack at it before that. Let me just make you an offer and prove that I can close, right? Why wait for it to go to an auction house?
Well, the general thesis, if you can get something like a short sale where the property is, the owners are failing, and you can pick it up with a bank approval, and does the bank really want to take it or you? A
Yeah.
lot of times they don't.
So, yeah. And Mike, this property was 95% occupied.
That was actually surprising that the
I
property
mean,
itself is not in deep distress, right? It doesn't sound like it's in deep distress.
it's not at all, dude. They put new roofs on it. They rehabbed it.
So how did the one bank wind up taking it? What happened? Do you know the
Well,
history?
so here's the story. It was actually in receivership for 7 years, which is very weird, right? And the only reason is the property manager, she had worked for this bank for a long time, and she had kids. She goes, I need to stay put for 4 to 5 years so I can get my kids all the way through high school. Her kids graduated in May, her last kid, and they put it on the market, did the whole thing, and then the auction closed in December. And so that's how I picked it up. But she managed it for that 7 years, and it was a weird deal. But that's why I had the full story on it, and I
This is
knew
not a
what
new
had been done.
foreclosure. This is a bank-owned property for a significant amount of time, and the bank somehow stayed in the business of property ownership, having this lady manage the property or something like that.
Yep. But even then, I still think there's lots of deals like this now, because the banks are tr they're in spots too where I think they're having to do renovations. The bank had spent a significant dollar renovating this property and expect and to keep it that long. The problem was it's a smaller school for this particular reason why I think I bought it for so cheap is it's not a D1 school. It's a smaller school, right? But it's a gem of a school because I was already in the market and I was filling up my property. even during COVID at 85%. So I already knew the market was strong. And so I already had, I truly had an inside track. But anyways, my whole point is this, though, is I think there's just more deals. Like, there's just what I'm seeing on the marketplace is all the cap rates and the third party or the bridge loans are coming due. And a lot of them, some of them are going back to the bank, buddy. A lot of them are going back to the bank.
Yeah, yeah. That so that
more than you think.
Yeah, that's the driver of some of these foreclosures is one, a maturity cliff, right? Maturity, when the loans mature and the banks don't want to hold the paper any longer and the borrowers can't repay.
But they're also being flexible too. So I see a lot of that going on too. No one wants to have egg on their face. So everybody's trying to make deals because they already know the situation that we're in. What I'm really interested in, Mike, is cost segregation. Are they going to extend it or get bonus depreciation to go back to 100?
Probably. I don't have the insight, but you probably heard it's in the Congress. And
yep.
Congress.
And I would like to see that happen. And I'm really interested to see what happens in the next 7 months, 10 months in this election cycle, because I don't exactly know where we're going to go. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. No one knows where we're going to go.
Yeah, it's a year of obviously election year and lots of volatility related to that.
But I like to buy in that stuff. This is where I'm like, I like to buy. I feel like that when there's confusion, usually that's when, like, think about, you're watching Warren Buffett take a lot of money out right now. He's getting liquid. There's a lot of things happening.
Well, people are gearing up for blood in the streets for great deals. And the fact that you found somebody already, people are saying it's still going to be at a later point in the year, maybe even next year, because the banks have to actually foreclose these properties. So a lot of the deals that are being discussed right now. But I have heard other people using auction sites. And when the banks are pushing them to sell, that's the way they want sold. They want certainty of execution. They want fast. And the opportunities are beginning to happen. No argument at all.
So if that's the case, then just have, you know, you got to go get some money and have it ready and have it stacked and then be able to, you know, have a team that can get it done quickly. And with that scenario there, you can pick up some decent deals, which is kind of, you know, and how many deals do you need a year for us? Like if we do one or two good deals, three good deals, that's it. I don't need to do any more. I'm not in a rush. But I definitely don't want to get left behind, right? Because I'm trying to dollar cost average all my bulls crap that I bought 2 or 3 years ago that I'm getting my ass kicked.
Let's talk a little bit about that. So the 21, 22 purchases have been, and a lot of them are just tough shape. So right. What are you seeing? What kind of corrections? I mean, I've heard valuation corrections, 30, 40% in Phoenix, Atlanta, Dallas. Well, Dallas was not as bad, but Austin, Houston, a lot of massive corrections. These properties are underwater in essence.
We're trying to buy in Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix and I've never been able to buy in Phoenix, but I think I could buy now. I'm trying to buy in my market because those corrections are real. Yes. And you know,
what are you seeing? What percentage are you seeing? Is 30, 40% about right?
Or I think it's a little high. I think it's closer to 20, 25, right? Now, if you go into the tougher markets where I don't buy, 30%, right? 35. I wouldn't buy in those markets. Those are Maryville, tougher areas in Phoenix, right? North or mid-city. I'm trying to buy in what's called East Valley, which is the Path of Progress. Products probably 2000-ish, you know, 2000, 2005 built stuff. But in that market, it's, you know, there's some discounts, but they're still not heavy because we still are building stuff all over the place. And it's not going to stop. Just because for Phoenix, that's the one thing they have going is we still have Californians coming in like crazy, mass exodus from that state. And then you have still the East Coast states that are cold where, you know, it's here. But the only challenge is we don't always have permanent residents. We get a lot of residents for 6 or 7 months. Yeah.
I hear you. So, but you're seeing discounts, you're seeing potential opportunities, you're working to get these deals, and that's the thesis in this environment, really only two interesting opportunities. One is deep buy, you just gotta find them. And of course, you gotta pick your market. And the fact that you are choosing to work certain cities and towns that you know well is, I mean, is important. You definitely wanna do business where you understand. Don't look for bright and shiny objects 1,000 miles away where you have no presence
Yeah,
because you
I'm not
don't
trying to
know
go
how
in
you're
any
gonna
more
run the
markets
asset.
that I'm not already in. That is a good one too. Like if we're not already in the market, we're not buying. And the only one that I'm not in is Phoenix, but I'm like, I've always wanted to buy in Phoenix because it's where I live. It's just been out of range because you always had to pay such a premium in pro forma to get those deals, even though long term they all work out most of the time, right? But you've got to condition capital a little bit differently in these markets because the REITs and all the big boys can overpay and they've got a lot longer term horizon than you do, and they outgun you every time. So, but now there's a little cracked in the playing field. So this is where you got to put your big boy pants on and say it's time to go to work.
Yeah, and I'm certainly I don't want to use the word excited about the opportunities I had, but it's like this. Just like you gave example, you bought the property dirt cheap, you put expensive financing on it, and these are actually good things. Why? Because you got a discount on the as is basis. You bought it through an auction, even though you're paying high interest rates. When the interest rates cycle down, you can always refinance. So
At the
you have
time, I looked like
almost.
a genius.
Yeah, exactly. So people need to be buying when there's blood on the streets. That's the time. And maybe it's not happening in volume yet, but the fact that it's happening, it's a start of recovery. Hopefully you're buying at the bottom or at the start of the recovery where nobody knows if it's recovery or not. Nobody knows if it's still gonna fall, right? But
Yeah.
if you get deal good enough today,
Yeah. Well,
then
that's why
you
I
can
call
make
it
good
dollar
numbers.
cost averaging at this point, right? Because I've learned that I can usually make money in every market. I just got to be able to hold on to my assets, right? So the ones that I bought 2 or 3 years ago, listen, are they perfect? Nope. Right. Some of them were barely cash flowing, because like the 100%, 200% increase in all your expenses and your insurance and all in taxes have gone up, right? So we're gonna keep on holding those, but we're like, we'll just push them and hold her instead of 5 years, we'll hold them 7, right? So, okay, we'll get down the road, but right now it doesn't look so great, but we're gonna keep raising the rents like we always do and just modeling and going, right? So, okay, I'm not gonna get home runs. Those are gonna be base hits now. They were maybe doubles to triples. Now they're base hits. That's okay, but I'm buying stuff now. I'm still buying, and the stuff that, because you never know, and I've learned this, I never know which deal is going to kill it. The ones that I think I'm gonna go kill it, I'm like, what the hell happened to that pro? And then there's one that I wouldn't even think, and all of a sudden, I have a property that in Yuma, Mike, I bought it for $9 million. 3 years later, I sold it for 19.
Well, what you're referring to is the basic rule of investing, diversify. And the dollar cost average says diversify in time. And these lessons have been learned by investors in the last few years. Diversification in time is just as important as physical geographic strategy diversification. And at times you don't know what's going to be a home run or what's going to be a strikeout, even though it's like a great batter comes to the plate and they look like they're going to hit a home run, but they swing big and they miss everything. And then some skinny kid kind of comes out and looks like he can barely hit a single or a double, and boom, before you know, the ball is out of here. So you just don't know. So the solution is to spread your risk among many, baskets and do it that way. Now, just a couple more quick questions. Capital raising. Are you seeing challenges? So when you bought this property in January, did you have investors? Do you have to cough up all the cash yourself? Do you have to
No, I
backfill
always have
them?
investors. So, man, I've been blessed. I will tell you, Mike, I have been blessed. I have a small army of small $100,000 to $300,000 investors. I don't ever have any big investors. I don't have million-dollar investors. And so we've done a really good job in just cultivating that investor base, right? Just and always having a trickle of new investors come on. And so like we wrote a book called Trust But Verified for passive investors. And what happens is we just keep that funnel going, and we teach and show and passive investors what to look out for. And then naturally they start attracting to us. So just like you, Mike, you've been doing it for a long time too. Now, is it easier right now? It's not, but it's not absolutely difficult either.
Well, if you
Right?
find deep enough deal and you can
Yeah.
demonstrate to
So
your
I
investors
showed
that
the
this is
deal
a
to
great
everybody, and then
deal,
when I showed
then
them
you got to
that
get
appraisal,
some dollars.
yeah. I showed them the appraisal, and when we got down, they're like, good job. I was like, yeah. And we're probably gonna cash flow. And we are cash flowing, and like every month now we're like, yep, this property's doing exactly what we thought it would.
How much leverage did you get in the deal? I'm just curious what financing bank.
65.
So 65%, and that sounds about right. That's probably about maximum leverage you can get in this environment. The banks are
Yeah.
not going
Yeah,
to
it's not an
less than 55.
80-20, right?
You got a problem with debt service coverage ratio, right? Because the interest rates is high, and the
Correct.
banks want to be at a low LTV. And the 65%, is it loan to cost or loan to value?
Loan to value on that one, LTV.
So the 65% loan to value, and you bought a 20% discount. So you actually got what loan to cost? I'm just curious.
I wouldn't even know the numbers. I'd have to pull it up, but I'm happy with it, whatever it is, right? Because it's working. And again, well, like this is a property that we'll probably keep for 10 or 15 years. So we'll go through the next 5 years in this cycle, and closer to whenever we see an opportunity to refi, and you don't know what things are going to do, but we're at 8.86. So if it goes down to 5, we're pretty money, Mike. We're gonna
Yeah,
like
of
that's
course.
probably a $30,000 swing, and that's all profit. And so our goal, because we raised it at such a high deal, is when we do refi, maybe there's 70% LTV money. I'll be able to cash out all my investor base with debt, and give all my investors back their principal and be done with that piece of it, and still own the asset. And I think, to me, that's our ultimate goal as we invest now in our properties, is to have a call option or an exit button for the capital. Because when we exit our capital, they're out, right?
Well,
They don't get
you're going
stay in the
back to the
deal.
classic plan. So the classic plan from, before we seen 21, 22 volatility, the market was kind of steadily climbing up. Here you bought deep and you bought it at expensive money. There's only one room to go from here, right? The
Yeah.
interest rates on a long-term basis have to come down. We just don't know when, but they'll have to come down. Unless the government continues to print a lot of money, continues to cause inflation, then the interest rates can be sticky. But in general, if the COVID spending is coming down and we're still going to be in deficits, but not as crazy as during COVID, then the interest rates should come down. Inflation is sticky now, but overall, if things come down, then the interest rates will come down and the credit might loosen up a little bit. So your LTV will go up, your debt service coverage ratio will get better. And then you might wind up doing exactly what you said, do a cash out refi to repay all the principal, and that's the good old plan, what it used to be, and now it's
It's
been
hard to find that
reversed.
plan, and this is just one of those that I think is going to pencil out just like that. So we were excited to find a deal that cash flows for the day we buy it, without a whole lot of value add. And like I go back to the job of a syndicator, right? One is to raise the money, but the other part, and to raise, I think the lowest cost, we try to raise cheap money. Mike, you know my way I do it. It's cheap money, right? But the other part is find needles in the haystack. That'll always be the real job. To
Yeah.
find good deals that make sense, you got to find needles in the haystack. You've got to look at a lot of deals and say no to finally be able to say yes. Most
Yeah.
people are not willing to do the work, Mike.
Agreed. You got to kiss a lot of frogs to find a princess, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, Corey, appreciate your wisdom. Thanks for sharing. This is fairly fresh data, so it's very helpful to see your point of view, how you are observing the market, the opportunities you're seeing. So thank you for sharing. Until the next time, we'll come back. We'll do it again. We'll give it some more time. So thank you for coming on the podcast. And tell folks once again how to reach out to the Big Kahuna.
The best way, I'd love to give everybody the book for free. So if they'll text the word trust to 480-500-1127, my team will send that book to them for free. That'd be the best way. Or kahunainvestments.com. Come find us.
Thank you, Corey.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.